Hello and welcome back as we continue our deep dive exploration of how the profession is changing. I'm Gareth Grog and joining me today is IFOA President Tan Swee Che and Marissa Hall, co-head of the Thinking Ahead Institute at Willis Towers Watson, a global not-for-profit research and innovation hub that's dedicated to harnessing the power of collective thought leadership in the investment space. So thank you so much to both of you for joining us today. We're going to be exploring what I think is one of the most important ways that the profession is changing. This change could perhaps be described as the broadening of the fields in which actuaries are working. Actuaries, as I don't need to tell you, are most well known for their work in insurance and pensions. But today we're going to be thinking about how that work is changing in the future, both inside these core fields and external to them. Marissa, if I could come to you with that question first, how do you see the profession changing inside these fields and external to them?
Oh, Gareth, and thank you so much. It's lovely to be here. You know, as you said, my background in the Thinking Ahead Institute is very much working within the investment industry. I'm an actuary, obviously, by qualification, and working with a number of asset managers and asset owners around the world. And I think regardless of which practice or which type of actuary are, there are some skills which are needed outside of the specific technical ones. And I think, you know, what we like to focus on is the building of T-shaped professionals. So those professionals that have, yes, a depth of knowledge, but are able to connect the dots across multiple fields and multiple disciplines, and also use emotional intelligence and creative intelligence. Now, you know, when we talk about creative intelligence, it's influencing skills and that ability to work in teams. So within the investment industry, we have seen a move from having a star fund manager to actually investment decisions being based within a team setting. And actually, we believe that that's a robust approach to decision making. And so actually having those relationship building skills are important, and also being very agile and adaptive to change. So there was some research recently of investment professionals where 90% of investment professionals believe that your role will change multiple times during your career. And actually that's quite a stark statistic. You know with certainty now that your likely career in 5 years' time or 10 years' time is going to be very different. And so actually being agile, being able to adapt to that change is quite important. I think on other sides, we see, you know, evolving levels of how do we evolve trust. And so therefore, you know, more and more organizations and investment professionals are being called to have higher levels of understanding of sustainability, ESG, and particularly in the investment practice, and show some measure of responsibility to society. We know that all of our industries have a connection to wider society. And we know that, you know, the returns that we need only come from a system that works. And so being able to have a systems perspective on how you operate is important, regardless of which field you are. Being able to apply that systems thinking that makes you think in loops instead of lines, and understanding the connection between things. And that's a skill set that I think professionals as a whole need to come to better terms with. So that combination of, you know, we talk about, as we said, the T-shape. So that combination of having that breadth of knowledge across multiple disciplines, being able to be savvy with technology, and combine artificial intelligence with human intelligence to deliver better outcomes. And that purpose-driven professional that shows societal responsibility and understands their duty and builds that in professional ethics, I think that's the future of the profession.
Thank you, Marissa. And Swee Che, this T-shaped professional that's also driven by social purpose, is this a model that you recognize yourself for how the profession is changing?
I think there are many drivers, change, of which purpose is an important dimension, And I started from a slightly different place, but I was struck by the resonance of our language, because she used the phrase joining the dots across different fields. And one of the basis of our strategy was about how we can navigate across the paradigms. Yeah? And the issue, and for me, I think my starting point was about relevance and impact in a very simple way in our workplace, right? How are the jobs of our actuaries changing, right? And the onslaught, the real practical onslaught, which gave the inspiration of IFOA's VSMD strategy 2 to 3 years ago, was primarily due to digital revolution as well as the fourth industrial revolution. Because all the work which we have been doing, what we have been teaching our students, was based on a print-based society and the way we collect data. But the onslaught of the way big data came forward and the advances of data science was of tremendous concern for the council in the last 3 or 4 years, right? How do we change the way we educate our actuaries at a very basic level to do their work well, because their work will be taken over by data scientists or by machines. Their task could be taken by machine, not the job, but the task could be. So that is a very much skill-based, because data science go to the heart of our training, because data science is an extension of mathematics and statistics when things become digital. And our starting point is that our basic skill set has to be modernized to solve the business problems of our time. Yeah, because had Reddington been alive, had James Dobson been alive, they would do that, because they were using the most modern mathematics of their time to solve contingency tables or immunization. So we had to do that because we got to be careful to make sure that our profession is relevant. So that was the starting point about data science. But we then also realized that skill set is not the answer, because things are going to change because of what Melissa said, because the whole industry structure is going to change, right? Because the way insurance is sold, whether health insurance data is collected because of variables like you see in Discovery Group in South Africa, and there are many examples like this, or how car insurance will be replaced by autonomous vehicles, all that is going to impact the configurations of industries, right? So are our actuaries, are we giving the training so that they can thrive in the next 30 to 50 years, because they're going to live longer lives? Yeah, 40 years ago, when I qualified, I was, with my skill sets, I was given a safe and secure box. So we realized that what we give our actuaries had to be slightly different, and we actually coined the word a springboard for the future, which actually speaks to Melissa, the ability to navigate across different domains. And that was the starting point of the strategy. And of course, Melissa talks about the bigger issues of our time, which we need systemic thinking. So at a very basic level, we have to cope. Although in the last 12 months, there are less conversation about data science and digital, but the real issue is still there, because the digital revolution is going to change the way we live, and therefore the way we work, and the way we price insurance, the way we collect data, the way we form reserves. So there's at a basic level, and that's a very big deal, yeah, very big deal. And of course, all the big issues about climate change, pandemics, and the efficacy of our financial systems are even bigger issues, right? Which Melissa speaks to, which actually calls to a very different dimension, because these issues, these systemic issues, create uncertainties in the world. And actuaries are risk professionals, and we are meant to ponder over problems and solve problems connected with risk and uncertainty. Yeah. And we have been too much in the area of risk in the last 15 years, because we're doing it within the system. Uncertainty is beyond the system. So I think it's a great opening for the profession in this context.
Thank you, Suchet. And Marissa, do you recognize from your work at the Thinking Ahead Institute this inhabitants too much in the sphere of risk and not enough in the sphere of uncertainty that Suiche mentions? And also, I'd like to know your views on the modernization of the actuarial skill set.
Yeah, so I think uncertainty, I mean, it's such an excellent point because, you know, we talk about these unknown unknowns. So things that you can't know and you can't quantify, and therefore you need to have an element of margin to account for the fact that you can't know everything. And I think, you know, the more experienced you are as an actuary, as you get in the profession, the more you realize how much you don't know and the more how complex things are. And this is why we talk about, you know, thinking in loops instead of thinking in lines and understanding the connectedness of things. And we see that particularly in the field of, you know, when we talk about climate change. And the point is that, you know, many climate scientists have said for years that there are these points called tipping points in which there you cannot say that there's going to be a linear relationship between temperature rise and the outcomes, because actually there's a tipping point at which things can change dramatically. And one of the features of being in a complex adaptive system is that you have reinforcing loops and you have dampening loops, dampening systems. And actually what we need to make sure is that for all of the reinforcements that we have enough dampening systems in there, enough checks and balances to make sure that you know, we don't end up in a catastrophic state. And that those checks and balances, you know, I think are very relevant to the actuarial profession. And so, you know, it goes to the point that Suiche raised about training and building up that basic level of skills and understanding about uncertainty. I think when it comes to, you know, your second point about, I believe it was about the future of the profession, you know, I think what we're seeing is we're seeing culture become a key topic, you know, particularly in the investment industry in which I work at, and understanding what we mean by the culture of organizations. And, you know, a lot of our research in the institute isn't around culture and sustainability. And actually, you know, typically when people think about culture, they think, well, this is just the way it is. This is the way that things are around here. But actually, with more conversations, actually, we need to understand how things are done this way and why things are done this way in culture, and recognizing that culture is a movable target that you can change and adapt. And some of the elements that we look at when we think about the culture of organizations and the professionals within it are, we think about innovation. We think about how does your organization learn from failure, you know, that test and fail feedback loop. We talk about things like diversity and inclusion. So how do you build the collective intelligence of teams, you know, to produce better outcomes and decisions? And we talk about things like, you know, transparency and openness in an organization. So how does information flow and the purpose of your organization and being able to articulate it and the behaviors that are acceptable in an organization. So when I think about the future of the profession, I also think about, well, how, what culture are organizations trying to target, and how do organizations measure that culture, and how do they manage that culture, and how do the professionals operate within it? So we need more thinking along those lines, and we need more thought leadership in that space, because that's how, as a profession, we can make a difference to, you know, to individuals. What is our thought leadership position on many of these topics?
Thank you. It's quite an amazing array in which the profession is changing, really. We have digital transformation, the culture of the organization, a focus on innovation, diversity, inclusion, systems thinking. It's an almost dizzying level of change. Can I ask you, Marissa, what do you think is driving that? So that's what's increasing the pace of the change in the industry at the moment?
Yeah, no, we're definitely in the great acceleration, isn't it? The speeding up of the speeding up. And I think it's that, you know, short answer is that recognition of the fact that we are so interconnected with the system around us, and that actually, you know, we've seen it this year. We've had three defining moments this year which seem to have changed everything. So we've had once again the reminder of the importance of climate change at the beginning of the year with bushfires in Australia. You know, we've had the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, and recognizing that actually all of our health and economic systems are very much aligned. And then we've had issues around social justice. So we talk about, you know, the killing of George Floyd in the US, and that once again re-triggering, you know, a passion for individuals around the world to say, respect our identity, you know, understand that diversity is important. And so what's happening is that, you know, when every one of these incidents and events happen, it's just a reminder of how connected all our systems are. And the pace of change is relentless, as you say, you know, it's speeding up.
And Suiche, do you concur that these macro factors just demonstrate the importance of modernizing the actuarial skill set to take account of these large driving forces that we see in the world?
The short answer is yes. Yeah, the short answer is yes. But I think that we also got to frame it appropriately, because we have a very diverse profession. When people go to work tomorrow or in 12 months' time, the pandemic is real, without doubt. But their work may not really change that much, right, in 12 months' time or 24 months' time. But I think in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, it will begin to diverge, right? It will begin to diverge. So we do not know what the precise changes are. We know that we are at an inflection point of sorts because of the three big issues which came together in the last 12 months. And to that, you can also add to the rivalry between US and China, which create another shock, right? And also the global efforts, global cooperation had become more national throughout the world. People are withdrawing from global institutions. So all these all come at the same time in the last 2 or 3 years. Yeah. So we do not know how the change is going to evolve, but as far as our work is concerned, we could change the way we respond to the change, right? Respond and how do we prepare for it? But there are different commentators who comment on different things, and they will say that actually we have been through many other more important inflection points, like industrial revolution, or when man started to become agrarian, start planting, you know, changes. But in the zeitgeist we live in our lifetime, the pandemic is a big deal. It's the first time which I've seen a crisis so global, and the uncertainty felt so global. So I think that we have to choose our response to it, right? Because we don't know where you will end. So in terms of digital, as well as in terms of the big sustainability issues of our time, yeah. So there we are. I need to get the essence of your, what was your question again?
My question was really, Switcher, about the what was driving these many different changes that we're seeing in the profession at the moment. Is it these macro factors?
I think one of the big, very easily identifiable factors is actually digital and the fourth industrial revolution, right? Because it defines how our work is done. And our work is largely about data, and data science becomes core. So they're the heart of what we do. So that is changing. And because of digital and fourth industrial revolution, all the things we provide insurance to, or pensions to, or risk management to, because the way we work are going to be different, right? So that is the first thing, right? And that was really the rage before climate change and pandemic and Black Lives Matter came to the foreground, yeah? But in the last 12 months, all this came to the foreground, starting with the bushfires, and also things like all the riots popping up in Hong Kong and elsewhere. And suddenly the world feels a bit different, a bit vulnerable. Yeah, and what I would call these are uncertainties. space. Yeah. So you have the digital one. The digital and fourth industrial one, I think, requires a slightly different response. It's about the innovation mindset. You've got to go to be more entrepreneurial. So that is one category. And there's something we can get our heads around to. So The Future of the Professions by Richard Susskind, and Machine Platform and Crowds by Eric Boyd Johnson speak to that space. Yeah. Digital is going to change the world, because the world is based, up to now, is based on a print-based society. So that was still a very complex problem, because it's going to take away all our valued life tables and compound interest tables. They're going to take that away. And besides, we are not going to be able to measure mobility based on life tables, but based on data provided by wearables and social platforms and all that. So that's a big deal, yeah. But the second group of change, which is, has to do with what I call uncertainties or sustainability issues, which is about climate, because we have been exploiting Mother Earth for so long, yeah, and also the biodiversity loss, yeah. So that's one aspect of it. I think Black Lives Matter has a different history on social justice. And pandemic is because of our global connectedness, right? I'm not sure what happened in Wuhan. Somebody could have eaten something, and then the world, whole world is plunged into the biggest uncertainty I've ever felt since I was born. Yeah, because it's amazing. If you asked me 12 months ago that this would happen to us, you wouldn't be able to imagine it, right? And that's because the world is so connected, right? It's so interconnected, and the way we travel, we just spread, right? So these are very non-linear risks, right? Non-linear risks and non-stationary risks, right? But we're not that good in that, because we don't measure that. We measure more stationary risks, right? Because we have property distribution, and that was a major achievement of the actual profession. But now it's a time to go back to look at the uncertainty which is posed by all these non-linear risks. And I think that Marissa talks about systemic thinking or systems thinking, which is really about second order. We're not trying to solve the problem in the first order, right? Yeah, trying to solve the problem in the first order. To give an example, this is a ship. You are trying to turn the handle, polish whatever, or put a... But actually, you shouldn't be traveling in the ship in the first place. You should be doing something else, yeah, which is really changing the system. That requires a slightly different mindset. That requires a second... And I think that... our strongest mindset on accuracy, cautiousness, and reticence, and consistency makes us very good systematic thinkers. Yeah, but dealing with uncertainties, we got to invoke systems thinking, yeah, which is more systemic thinking. And I take a leaf out of Reddington's speech, as well as Ronnie Bowie, who is the first president of IFOA. The Scottish first president of IFOA, who talks about boldness and courage, right? Reddington talks about imagination, because courage and imagination are required to think systemically, but always paired with judgment, right? And many books have been written about uncertainties, and uncertainty cannot be solved mathematically. It had to be solved by metaphors, narratives, and judgment, right? And that is a very difficult concept to get round, yeah? But if you think carefully about it, if you look at our history, at the great actress John Morgan or James Dodson, Maycomb, or whatever, yeah, they were actually dealing with uncertainty at that time. Yeah, they were trying to reduce uncertainty into something which is measurable, because it's probabilistic, right? So they gave us a whole set of tools, right? And then we now got data science, which is actually from big data could churn out rules and heuristics, whatever. But now we've got another box of uncertainty, which is about nonlinear systems, right? And how do we tackle that? So we need some thought leadership in that space, lah. And I think it is that concerns all of us, and we have a special obligation. I think if you are actuaries, one could say that you continue to do your systematic work. But we call ourselves risk professionals, right? And if you call ourselves risk professionals, you are supposed to make ourselves resilient against adverse consequences, right? So it's so your risk system has to be good, but to be a true risk virtuoso, professional virtuoso, you've got to make sure that whatever models you rest on, the underlying system is sound. So a very good example is Northern Rock. Northern Rock has a triple A rating, a triple A rating 2 weeks before it collapsed in UK. Yeah, and that's based on the checklist on risk register and all that. So it's wrong, but the assets, the liquidity of assets in that time, because of the way the demand for liquidity at that time, they couldn't convert it to cash, you see, and it collapsed, right? Cooperative Bank in the UK has the same issue, was rated as the most sustainable bank by Financial Times and Euromoney in 2 years in succession, and then they had an issue because it is not about risk reports, it's about the soundness of the board and the management and the culture, which is not fully captured. So you really got to look much beyond. So I was in a presentation recently, and one of our actors talked about multi-threaded narratives, right? And he talks about the trajectory of different outcomes, yeah? And we got to bring the people into a room to ask very simple question, what's going on here? What's going on here? What could go wrong? It's not about trying to overanalyze, although analysis is important, because it gives you a false comfort. You give a false comfort that you are sound or secure, but there's something else happening, right? And I think that belongs to uncertainty and this talk about judgment.
Yeah.
And Mervyn King, who is the Bank of England governor, chair of the governor of Bank of England, right? But he recently wrote a fairly extensive book called Radical Uncertainty, along with John Kay. Who incidentally has agreed to speak to the IFOA in March, yeah, John Kay, along with a number of other luminaries, yeah, about uncertainty and financial system. He laid it all out, right? And I think it's about blank judgment and narratives, right? And that is not an easy concept for us, but I think that recognition of that is a good thing, yeah. And we have people who have written papers about it in the IFOA. And we just got to bring it to the foreground, right? To bring thought leadership more into the foreground. And I wouldn't say that we have the answers. We are a small profession, you know? So whether we can solve any problem in a dramatic way is really open to doubt. But we can contribute to the solution because we are risk professional. And I think changing our way we think about it could be liberating, yeah? Liberating, instead of being just a rule taker. I'm not sure it's fair, but I certainly say in my presidential address, I sense the profession have been, after the Morris review, after the fall of Equitable, has been more inward looking and more concerned about getting things right. And I think it's probably right. But the world, I think as risk professional, it's time to maybe be a bit bolder and stick our head out and say that, okay, actually, that's our view on climate change. We don't have the answers, but we are ready to take part and be slightly more courageous, yeah? Slightly be more courageous in and speaking to the social issues of our time, yeah? Because I think that is important. Yeah.
Thank you, Suichai. That's a fascinating sort of other side to the discussion. You spoke a lot about mindsets, courage, judgment, and approaching things in a different way. Marissa, where do you see the profession going next? And what would you say to actuaries who wanted to start working in it today?
Yeah, no. Gosh, good question. So just to address that point, is this time different? You know, all of the things that we've seen, you know, just this year, how is it different from crises before us? And I think there's a very good point Suichai made about, you know, for many people, the world, you know, in the profession, it feels as if it's just going on. And, you know, it's never different on our inherent behavioral biases and our natural reversion to old habits. Our modus operandi is go back to business as usual, use the same models, use the same form of thinking, and regardless of how the world changes around us, we are naturally resistant to change because we're accustomed to things. And I think what is different is that the state of the world is even more complex, and we are understanding the linkages between things more so. And it's enormous. Some of these game changers are absolutely enormous. And so I think the important message here is that how do we, as a profession, adapt our way of thinking, adapt our skill sets for this world, which is just speeding up? And we talk about, yes, being risk professionals, and within the investment industry, we talk about the shift in paradigm from two-dimensional investing, which is just looking at risk and return, but introducing a third dimension called impact. And impact, our investment decisions have always had an impact on society. It's just that historically we've put a zero weighting on this. And actually, as more professionals embrace that our decisions have an impact on wider society and on the planet, and actually those decisions operate in a feedback loop into how we are able to operate and the returns that we are able to generate, then we recognize that we need a more expansive way of thinking. So in terms of your question, what advice I'd have to actuaries is, where do we see the profession going next? I naturally see a world where we can no longer rely on those linear forms of thinking. If you want to be the professional of the future, you need to be more creative. You need to show more bravery and courage, as Suijin made. You need to understand the responsibilities to multiple stakeholders. And obviously, integrity and respect and ethics becomes paramount as things become more complicated. And so for young people hoping to join profession, I remember many years ago, I wanted to be an actuary. I wanted that badge of the profession. And you do your exams, you pass through, and then you say, well, what's going to happen now? But actually, it's the day-to-day practice. It's applying the judgment. It's recognizing that things are complicated and not straight. That's really an important mindset to get your heads around. But it's a wonderful profession to be in. So,
thank you, Marissa. I'll end just by coming to Suiche, just to say, Suiche, what's the IFOA doing to support this change in the profession?
Could I just touch on some of the points about joining the profession, because I have been speaking to many students, actual students and young actuaries in Malaysia, Singapore, China, Africa, UK, Ireland, and the way I have told them is that it is an extremely good time for them to join the actual profession if they have a natural inclination for mathematics and analysis. That is core, that is a non-negotiable, and that they want to make a difference in a very practical setting. Because you have been great in mathematics and be a theoretician, but this is a practical setting. And also, if you want to make a difference in social impact issues of our time, and it's a good time to be an IFOA actuary, because I do believe in that. And that actually ties in with your next question, what we are doing to prepare actuaries for the future, right? Firstly, we must give them something tangible, because we can talk about abstract ideas and all that. And I've been challenged many times. Those are all abstract ideas. What are you doing next year? Yeah. So you've got to give them the skills, the data set skills. So we have a data science certification, which we have, and we are enhancing the data science credentialization, because that's core. You must be able to adapt, right? And if you want a climate science certificate, which we are working very hard on, and we are also working in diverse fields. So a banking fellowship is coming up, and there are other things in the pipeline. So those are in the area of skill sets. But more importantly, is in the area of mindsets, which I come back to later. But in the area of skill sets, we have a committee which was assembled, which is about It's common short, and we have decided strategically and philosophically about the way we are going to train actuaries and also educate actuaries. It's not going to be based on exams and qualification, although they are still important, but it's about learning and continuous learning over the entire lifetime, which is going to get increasingly longer. And that is a very big change if you do it sincerely and faithfully, because we have a culture of passing exams and doing a qualification conscious, and but those are still important standards we need to achieve. But learning should not stop there. Yeah? It has to be continuous learning, and that's the culture of learning which we are eager to inculcate. The other two which we were talking about would be that we will be flexible in the way we credentialize actuaries in terms of creating optionality and modularization, and we will work with external suppliers, yeah, or external partners in terms of providing education, because the whole thesis about the VSMD strategy is actually most solutions you need are multidisciplinary. So by definition, you can't have the answers, and the answers cannot be based on past analysis. It must be future orientated. So you've got to go outside, and you've got to be quick to market, meeting up the needs. So that is quite a big change. For that change to take root, the cultural transformation of IOA needs to take place. Yeah. So that is answering the question on what they're doing to support. That is more organizational. But there is something else, yeah, which is about culture and mindset. And I said in my presidential address and in part of my presidential manifesto that we've got to transform the profession in terms of mindsets. Yeah. So in other words, we got to be willing to be more adaptable, to be more curious, to have the growth mindsets which calls for experimentation, perseverance, and learning from failures. Yeah. So these are very not is very standard, not standard. They are not big discoveries. They are accepted. They are accepted qualities you need to thrive in a digital world, in a digital world of innovation, right? But I think more latterly is about sustainability issues, and I think I spoke about courage, imagination. So that is something we want to model, we want to speak to, and increasingly we have to bring the examples, the role models, the thought leadership pieces into the foreground. So that's how the institute is preparing. And I also would say that it's not something you can press a button and it happens. It has to have been repeated over time by our leaders, by our role models, by our communication, and then the world might feel a bit different. The way we think about ourselves, if it's a bit different, the world will start changing. I think I read the famous quotation from Mahatma Gandhi, right? That the world begins to change when you change yourself. It's really not about other people changing, you're not doing this, but actually the way we do things ourselves. And I think that it has to start at the council, at the IFOA executive team, and it's reflected and it's percolated. And I think I like the word Marissa used, tipping points. The tipping points and the cascading effects will take place. And we are not in control of it really, because we are also part of a system. So we've got to start the process, yeah? Let's start the process.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. It only remains for me to thank you for the time that you've both put in today. It's been a fascinating discussion, and I hope our listeners will join us for further podcasts as we explore the change in the actuarial industry. Thank you, Marissa. Thank you, Suiche.